Welcome to episode 39. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup, and in particular with community health as it continues to go through a year of intensive bargaining. This week we're scheduled to meet with the MSAV. MSAV is the union that covers dietitians, psychologists and pharmacists. Updates with regards to that meeting will be posted through the VHA community app. With respect to our health service members, AMA bargaining continues twice weekly on Tuesdays and Thursdays. However, there is an upcoming meeting on the 19th of October where AMA will be reporting back to its members. And so effectively the parties only have a short period of time to make as much progress as they can. The EBA reference group is meeting on a fortnightly basis, and again, all the bargaining meetings as well as the reference group meetings are the subject of summaries through the VHA community app. With respect to the nurses and midwives EBA, the reference group is meeting on the 10th of October. The purpose of that meeting will be to discuss the process of and the progress with regards to implementation of that agreement, as well as to provide a report back with regards to the SDPPWG process for that agreement. And also this week, we'll be meeting with the Regional Health Services Nurses Executive Group. It's a valuable opportunity for us to engage with those members with regards to the nurses agreement and the implementation issues that have arisen. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. And joining me for this week's discussion, because Tim Nagle has not returned from the grand final.
The Tigers are going to win the premiership in 2017.
Is senior workplace relations consultant Daniel Pullen. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you, Stuart.
Daniel, would you be good enough to reveal the clue for this week's discussion?
What clue?
Good point. This clue. Daniel, for the benefit of those people who are listening rather than watching this podcast, could you please describe the object?
It's a painting of dogs playing poker.
Indeed, it is a classic, taken from Tim's own personal collection. And on the basis of that particular object, what would you say that the subject for this week's discussion is?
It could be about maintenance staff, given the theme of a painting.
That is a long, long bow. That would be incorrect, Daniel. Not only are they dogs, they're playing poker. Today we're talking about multi-skilling and the multi-skilling allowance.
Great.
We'll just move that over there to our invisible set of hands. So, Daniel, as somebody who is working closely with the Health and Allied Services Managers and Administrative Workers Agreement, as somebody who truly does have the skills to pay the bills, could you tell us a little bit about the multi-skilling allowance?
So the multi-skilling allowance was an entitlement that was paid under the 2011 to 2015 Enterprise Bargaining Agreement for the Health and Allied Services. This came in 2014 as a result of the Clause 11 changes. And
just to remind people, what was Clause 11?
So Clause 11 was a package of reserve matters that at the commencement of that agreement, during bargaining of the 2011 Health and Allied Agreement, there was a group of matters that were reserved for discussion and bargaining and funding during the life of the agreement.
So it was a set amount of funding?
Correct.
That could then be distributed by agreement, effectively, with the unions?
Correct.
And what happened with regards to reaching agreement? My recollection was that there, at the time that agreement was reached, there was the Health Services Union Eastern Branch, which was a consolidated branch, but by the time the agreement was actually operative and approved, that consolidated branch had disamalgamated and the branches had broken up. And then it took some time to actually reach agreement as to how that fixed funding was going to be distributed.
Look, it did take quite a bit of time. Members would recall that it was October 2014 that the Fair Work Commission authorised the new agreement, which took into consideration these changes, and one of those changes was the multi-skilling allowance.
Which was done through a variation from memory.
Correct.
And for the multi-skilling allowance, to whom did it apply?
So it only applies under the new agreement to food and domestic services assistants and patient services assistants.
So in terms of who's covered by the multi-skilling allowance under the new agreement, has it changed from the varied agreement?
It has. The previous agreement also included a multi-skilling allowance payable to interpreters. That allowance is not paid under the new 2016 to 2020 enterprise agreement.
So let's talk about money. How much is the multi-skilling allowance?
So the multi-skilling allowance that's payable from the first full pay period on or after the 13th of November this year is $1,000. Subsequent payments of the multi-skilling allowance on the 13th of April next year and each year thereafter will be $500.
So the 13th of November, the 13 is just simply for good luck, I take it?
Just for good luck.
And why is this year's $1,000 and next year's $500?
So members would recall that last year in 2016, the multi-skilling allowance wasn't paid. This was on the basis that the previous enterprise agreement, the 2011 to 2015 agreement, only prescribed payment in the years 2014 and 2015. Members would note that the new agreement provides for payments from the 13th of April 2018 and the words, and each year thereafter, has been inserted to remove the risk of that occurring again.
So just in terms of the payment that's coming up and the subsequent payments, part-timers and casuals, who is entitled and how is it paid to those groups?
It's a great question. So part-time employees are paid on a pro rata basis. Casual employees are specifically excluded from any payment. Also, employees that are on unpaid leave, the date the entitlement falls due, are excluded from the entitlement to multi-skilling allowance.
Okay, so you have to be not on unpaid leave at that point.
Correct.
Okay. And in terms of finding the location of that particular allowance under that agreement, it's a big agreement, where do members find that particular provision?
So the multi-skilling allowance is prescribed at Clause 53 for Food and Domestic Services Assistance and Clause 54 for Patient Services Assistance, and both of these exist on page 63 of the Health and Allied Agreement.
So is that Section 2, the Health and Allied section?
Correct, the red section.
So just to clarify again, to whom does this allowance apply?
Only food and domestic services assistance and patient services assistance.
I feel as though that is something that should be written underneath us and flashing.
I would agree.
And it applies to part-timers on a pro-rata basis and to full-timers, but casuals are excluded?
Correct. And employees that are on unpaid leave the date the entitlement falls due are also excluded. And that would also include employees that are on unpaid parental leave.
So that's what's about to happen. But let's wind the clock back a little bit in terms of some of the queries that had arisen when this allowance was first introduced. There are a number of queries involving the payment to employees that worked alongside those patient services assistants and the food and domestic services assistants. How are those managed?
That's correct. So in 2014, when this multi-skilling allowance was first introduced, we received a number of queries from our members around queries that are coming from their staff that work alongside patient services assistants and food and domestic services assistants. What's important to clarify is that the allowance, the multi-skilling allowance, is only payable to employees that are classified as food and domestic services assistants or patient services assistants. If an employee is engaged as a patient services assistant for 0.5 EFT and a menu monitor or a food monitor for 0.5 EFT, they would receive a pro rata benefit of the multi-skilling allowance to the value of 0.5 of $1,000, which will be $500.
So for those people who have a mixed role and one of the classifications that they're employed in attracts the multi-skilling allowance and the other doesn't, then they get a proportion that matches with the proportion of their food and domestic services or patient services assistant role.
Correct.
Okay. Is there other classification definitions in the agreement that might assist members to correctly classify their food and domestic services assistance employees?
There is. The classification definitions for food services commences on page 115 of the Health and Allied EBA, which is Section 2, and it defines food and domestic services assistants as a person employed to clean food preparation and consumption areas, cooking equipment and utensils, and serve and deliver meals.
So just in terms of the importance of that, that's really about making sure that somebody is not incorrectly classified as a food and domestic services assistant when they're not, and conversely that people are not misclassified out of that classification and therefore denied the multi-skilling allowance. Getting those classifications right, I would have thought, would be crucial.
It is, and people would recognise that the classifications would be the primary method of determining whether someone is entitled to the allowance or not entitled to the allowance. So their correct classification is really important.
So that's the food and domestic services classification. What about the patient services assistance?
So the patient services assistance structure is a substantially larger classification structure than the food services structure. But it commences on page 169 of the Health and Allied EBA, section 2. And it provides that the work of PSAs involves the performance of duties across three or more functional areas of patient support services, with PSAs being essentially ward-based.
So without dwelling too much in history, what was the classification that gave rise to the most confusion when this allowance was first introduced back in 2014?
Our members indicated previously that the orderly slash cleaner classification provided the greatest confusion.
How so?
Well, it's built on the basis that an orderly or cleaner shares very similar roles to that of a patient services assistant, but also a food and domestic services assistant, insofar as that they can assist in the delivery of meals. They can also assist in the collecting of meal trays. They can also assist in the cleaning of wards and units. What's important to note is that the classification definitions for general services commences on page 156 of the Health and Allied EBA, and it provides a definition of an orderly or cleaner as a person employed to perform basic cleaning, orderly, porterage, courier functions in hospitals or other health services. So it's quite a limited scope in comparison to that of a patient services assistant, and also quite limited in its application to food services than that of a food and domestic services assistant.
My recollection is that under the heading of things that weren't anticipated as being potential issues when that allowance was introduced is that there were some instances where people had utilised a classification of convenience, and a whole range of jobs had been classified into the one classification even though they didn't do that job, and people had effectively been misclassified because the pay rate was the same. But it gave rise to issues associated with the classification would be entitled, but they weren't doing that particular job.
Correct. And I think what's of utmost importance, as we mentioned earlier, is ensuring that a person is classified having regard to their duties, having regard also to the classification definitions that exist in the agreement. We can understand that health services, that the history of this agreement and this cohort of staff has varied the classification structure over the previous two enterprise agreements. We moved from a structure that incorporated quite a number of different roles and duties to a smaller cohort of roles and duties and classifications in the 2011 to 2015 agreement. And then the 2016 onwards agreement has incorporated those changes.
I think there's also a bit of a lesson for those outcomes that are specific to a classification and about how to structure and ensure that the process doesn't generate some unexpected outcome, as was the case when that was first introduced.
Yeah, I'd agree, and I think that the challenge would be in a health service is just ensuring that their staff are classified correctly, having regard to their duties and utilising those classification descriptors within the Health and Allied agreement.
So we've got some fairly significant payments coming up, the most pressing of which is the first full pay period on or after 13 November 2017. It's a significant payment of $1,000. What should members do in the event that they get claims for this allowance for employees who aren't classified in one of the applicable roles? That is, they're not classified as patient services assistants, they're not classified as food and domestic services assistants.
Look, it's a great question. I think history over the past 3 years would tell us that this is likely to occur in our health services. Members should inform the employee that the allowance is only provided to employees classified as food and domestic services assistants and patient services assistants, and it may be beneficial to point them to the page within the agreement to which both clauses clearly prescribe the entitlement and the scope of the entitlement. But if members are continually receiving queries where the employee believes that their duties are inconsistent with the classification descriptor, the employer should review the title or the classification of the employee. If it is that an employee that may have been engaged under or classified under a historical classification, but their colleagues that are performing the same work and the same duties are classified as a patient services assistant, but they've remained classified as an orderly. Mm-hmm. It may be beneficial for a health service to review their classification and ensure they're classified correctly.
It's interesting. It's almost the two components there, one of which is that the only basis really for a claim from someone who isn't one of those classifications should be on the basis of either misclassification or potentially if the organisation has taken an inconsistent approach that might muddy the waters somewhat.
That's true.
And if there is an issue, if there is a disagreement, how should members resolve that issue?
So members are encouraged to utilise the dispute resolution procedure that's prescribed within the agreement.
And as always, I take it there is material to remind members to make this payment on the 13th of November 2017?
Correct. So members would be aware that there's a bulletin that's been released recently that prescribes some of the specifics around the application of this clause.
And if there are any issues that do emerge, they'll be updated through the Health and Allied Services group on the community app?
Correct.
Daniel, thank you very much for taking us through the multi-skilling allowance. I feel as though we should conclude this discussion by looking at that painting one more time. So thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Stuart.
And thanks to Dogs Playing Poker.
And thank you to Dogs Playing Poker.